You are Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast on the Houston Rockets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Breaking news. There's finally a 3-and-D replacement. With that joyous note, welcome in to Locked On Rockets, your home for podcast analysis of all things Houston Rockets basketball. I'm your host, Ben DuBose, Rockets correspondent for Sports Talk 790, the team's official radio flagship. As we chat this Wednesday evening, we know courtesy of Shams Charania of Yahoo Sports, who broke the story, the Rockets have agreed to a minimum deal with James Ennis, 28-year-old small forward, most recently of the Detroit Pistons. Ennis, who was drafted in 2013 out of Long Beach State, has bounced around the NBA but seemed to find a home the last couple of years in Memphis until he was traded at the deadline to the Pistons, part of Memphis' sell-off when it was obvious that the Grizzlies were not going anywhere. But at 6'7", generally regarded as a strong defensive player, very physical, brings a presence, and at 28 years old is potentially still on the upswing of his career, especially now coming into a contending environment in Houston. Jeff Bezdelic got to know him well, Rockets defensive guru, assistant to Mike D'Antoni in the 2015-2016 season in Memphis. And if Bezdelic signed off on the addition of Ennis, then you know the Rockets have to be feeling pretty good about his potential. And it's sorely needed because the Rockets, within the first 10 days of free agency, lost two of their top three defensive players at the wings, kept P.J. Tucker, but both Trevor Ariza and Luke Bamute chose to go elsewhere in free agency. So the Rockets needed a replacement. Preferably, they needed one on the cheap because they're presumably saving the mid-level exception for Carmelo Anthony. And fortunately, James Ennis checks a lot of those boxes. So I can tell you guys what I know about him, which of course is his 6.4 career scoring average. That's not all that impressive, but A, he's just a 20 minutes per game player, so he's a rotation piece, not expected to be any sort of foundation guy. But in addition to his strong defense, a career 36% shooter from behind the arc. So in terms of a role player around Chris Paul, James Harden, and we presume Clint Capella, that's exactly what you're looking for, and hopefully he can bring a lot of the same skills to the table that we saw this past year out of Trevor Ariza and Luke Bamute. That said, other than seeing him when the Rockets played the Grizzlies and the Pistons the last couple of years, I can't pretend that I have done that much scouting on him. One guy who can, fortunately, is my friend Karthik Prasad. We've had him on the show before. You know him as Stanford KP on Twitter. But ever since Trevor Ariza left and Luke Bamute, it became clear that he potentially could leave. Karthik has done a lot of scouting on Ennis, and he has been thrilled with what he has seen. So rather than try and relay things from his Twitter feed, I'm going to get Karthik on himself to break things down. So stick with me for just a moment, and we'll have Karthik Prasad right here at Locked On Rockets to talk more about this James Ennis signing. Karthik, how's it going, my friend?
Good, good. How are you, Ben?
Doing well. I was introducing your usual credentials a minute ago, your Twitter handle, of course, your status as a longtime Houston sports guy. But for purposes of our conversation today, I think I can call you the founding member of the James Ennis fan club in Houston. Is that a fair characterization?
Sure, yeah. I mean, I think since the offseason started and he first got on the Rockets radar, I started looking into him more, and I think given the signing and his potential and his ability to contribute, I'm pretty high on him, that's for sure.
Tell me what jumped out to you about him, because I know you've done some digging into him, not just the videos, but I know some of the advanced stats as well. And it became obvious, really, on July 1st when Trevor Ariza left, that 3-and-D types on the wing were in need, maybe to get younger as well. And then, of course, when Bamute left on Monday, it became a glaring need. So the Rockets had a few options. They were linked to at various points in free agency and different reports. But following you on Twitter, at Stanford KP, James Ennis was always, in terms of potential guys that could take the minimum, more on the contract side in a moment, but Ennis always seemed from a basketball guy, from a basketball side, to be the guy that was at the top of your list. Explain to me what stood out in his background and why you're optimistic on this.
Yeah, you know, I think a couple things. So first, he's got really good size at the position. So he's 6'7", close to 7-foot wingspan. I think he brings above average, if not really good, athleticism to the position. I think of the things you see when you watch him is just how easy he runs the floor and he's able to finish in transition, et cetera. And then defensively, and this is just at the eye test level, I think he does a good job of just staying in front and staying disciplined. And I know that Coach Pizdelic had him at Memphis, and so I'm excited to see how he can be coached up. And then statistically, you know, I think he's undervalued, and I'll explain that in a couple of minutes. But I think the main thing is he's had so many stops in his NBA journey that it's hard to get a good read on him. But where he has had consistency, so the 2016-2017 season in Memphis, and then also I think he had a short stint in New Orleans in kind of an up-tempo system. I think there is a lot of potential that was impacted to those stints. He's a good three-point shooter, especially from the corners, and I think he'll thrive in our up-tempo system. And so, you know, based on his profile physically, his athleticism, his ability to be coached up, and I think his hidden gem type of qualities as a shooter, and then, as you mentioned, we'll get into the contract, I think his value and it's just off the charts, and so we'll see if he can live up to that, but I'm excited.
Yeah, one of the holes you could poke, his defensive numbers for his career, looking at some of the advanced stats, grayed out as pretty good, but not great. He's a guy who,
yep,
I would say the eye test favors him even more than the additional numbers, in that advanced numbers, I should say, in that he's very physical, he looks the part. If you go to YouTube and search James Ennis defense, you'll see a game in which he gave Harden fits. So he's always been a guy that looks the part physically. The advanced numbers show him to be good, but not great, not to Ariza or Bamute level. But the flip side, I think, would be that for a guy who's bounced around the Heat, the Pelicans, the Grizzlies, then the Pistons, none on particularly good teams, you can mount a pretty compelling case, and it sounds like that's kind of what you're thinking, that some of his deficiencies defensively might be due to just not really having continuity, not really being in a system. I guess the first year with Eric Spoelstra in Miami, you could argue, when he played 17 minutes a game effectively as a rookie in 2014. But he seems to be the type of guy that you could mount a case that if you put him in a structured system in Houston on a contender with a defined role that he feels comfortable in, that all of a sudden you could start to see that defense make a real uptick. Is that reasonable?
Yeah. And definitely, I would agree with that. I think he's also a good rebounder on the defensive end. I think that his length will go a long way. And just being long at the position and the way that we switch our defense goes a long way in being a good defender as a Houston Rocket. And so I think, to your point, the system we have, the fact that Coach Pizdelic is familiar with him, the fact that he'll have a really good rim protector in Capella behind him, I think those will all make his consistency and impact on the defensive end be greater than we've maybe seen at any individual stop.
I want to turn our attention to the contract, which is part of the value equation, because with Ennis, we're banking on a certain degree of untapped potential here, but part of it, there's so low risk in terms of your investment, essentially a two-year contract, player option for the second year at the league minimum. One of the things that jumps out to me, for a lot of years, you worry about seeing around the league overpaying for veteran role players on contending teams. And what I mean by that are guys who get maybe a little more money than their statistics would otherwise show based on the exposure they get for being in a really good system. Is it possible that there's somewhat of that dynamic going on when you compare the valuations of Trevor Ariza and Luke Bamute to James Ennis? Not saying at all that Ennis is anywhere near as accomplished as the former two, but when you look at Ariza getting $15 million, when you look at Luke Bamute getting almost what the Rockets' full share of the MLE would be, when you consider they're saving a small part for DeAnthony Melton, when you look at how Daryl Morey, with the prism in which he signs these types of deals, it almost feels like that Ennis is a better value. And that's not meant to be a slight to Ariza or Luke at all, but when you're trying to build a contender in this era of the luxury tax around the big three, or we presume the big three, CP, Harden, and Clint Capella, you could make an argument that Ennis, at the minimum, is a better value than Luke Bamute, almost at the MLE, or Trevor Ariza at a one-year $15 million deal. And if you want to take the glass half full view, you can say that rather than overpay a guy like Ariza or Bamute, whose value is getting boosted artificially based on having played in so many big games for a great team, essentially, the Rockets, with the culture in place, maybe you can develop internally a guy like James Ennis who can eventually turn into what Luke Bamute is now at 32, or Trevor Ariza at 33. What are your thoughts on that dynamic from a salary perspective?
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree. Paying $2 million for James Ennis versus a combined $19 million for Ariza and Luke Bamute, or maybe, you know, $4.5 million just for Luke, I think the value equation is clear. And he's done enough, I would say, in his previous stops to give me confidence that he will be a positive contributor. And I think the other piece to it is, even outside of his individual value, just based on his contract, I think there's a lot of optionality now that it opens up for the Rockets going forward. I mean, yes, there are tax implications and what that does to your overall salary with the repeater tax, et cetera, but I think it's more, if he's good, now all of a sudden you have a young piece that you have improved the value of, and that can hold value in future trade. The fact that it's a 1 year structured as a 1-1 gives you optionality next summer. Things like that where they have structured this and they have explored this, I think, to find a higher value piece to give them optionality and to give them upside in the deal, such that if he pans out, they can keep a guy like James Ennis for another 3 years, and he will be still in his relative prime in terms of athletic ability. So there's a lot of pieces to me of the value equation, starting with just his contract, but also the optionality it opens up going forward for us.
The other part of it that jumps out to me is how interrelated it is with the MLE. Because part of the reason I'm willing to give James Ennis the benefit of the doubt relative to Luke Bamute, if Bamute was not willing to sign for either the minimum or the non-bird tender, then if you use that MLE for Luke Bamute, what I think a lot of folks that aren't as cap savvy don't realize is that if you sign Carmelo Anthony to the minimum, sure, he might be willing to do that since he's getting bought out for $20+ million from Oklahoma City, we presume, or wherever they theoretically trade him. Either way, he's going to get bought out. But you would only be able to offer him slightly above that or the MLE, which essentially you'd be putting yourself next summer in the same position with Carmelo that you were in this summer with Luke, which is that if you sign a guy for the minimum to a one-year deal, you're not really at any sort of advantage in being able to retain them. Either they have to take a bargain deal, which is unlikely, or you have to use your MLE, which means you can't use your MLE anywhere else to upgrade your team. So in terms of Ennis versus Luke, you could sell me that Luke is more proven and that certainly for the Rockets, any changes is a risk to the great chemistry of a 65-win team. I agree on that. But when you combine it with what it means moving forward, which is that, you know, if you were to give the MLE to Luke and then sign Carmelo Anthony at the minimum, but then you'd essentially be waving goodbye to Carmelo or next summer's MLE as a result of that, to me, it's hard to argue that going this route, essentially getting your 3-and-D for the minimum and then Carmelo for the MLE is the safer play because it gives you the better opportunity to A, retain Carmelo long-term if it works out, and B, have your MLE next summer to go out and make other upgrades if that's what you need.
Yeah, totally agree. And the other thing is, so they had that option, right, which is to offer Luke the MLE, which would have probably precluded Carmelo. And then I think what they were trying to do was convince Luke to take the non-Bird Max, which would have still preserved the MLE for Melo. But then what that does is basically put them in a almost like a wink-wink deal to make good on Luke's salary for next year, right? So the whole premise on that would have been, hey, take the $2.8 million this year, and then we'll make good on it by giving you eight or nine next year. And that, again, you're hamstringing a little bit of your future flexibility. And I think what they get now with Ennis is complete optionality. If he pans out, they can find him and properly assess his value. If he doesn't, they have now the ability to go add another piece. And so you're not kicking the can down the road, so to speak. And as you said, you have the ability to re-sign Melo next year in a better way, and you have a cheaper, maybe higher value, you could argue, replacement in James Ennis. So I think it's a good move from all those perspectives.
Wrapping up the show here with Karthik Prasad. You know him as Stanford KP on Twitter. We spent most of the first 15 minutes or so talking about James Ennis. Before we close out, we do want to transition to the guy that's been the focus of really the last week or so, the focus of the last two summers. We already touched on him a little bit, that being Carmelo Anthony. It's yet another summer of Carmelo, but fortunately this one does not appear to be lasting anywhere near as long as last year's when it drug out to training camp. We've heard a lot of reports this week from Las Vegas where the Rockets are playing in summer league. We'll have more on that activity in the days ahead, by the way. But with everybody out in Las Vegas, the Thunder GM, Sam Presti, is working with Leon Rose, the agent of Carmelo Anthony, to expedite the process, be it a trade and buyout or just a straight buyout and stretch. But either way, Carmelo Anthony should become a free agent relatively quickly. And we presume Houston would be his destination. Now, there have been a couple of reports from, Adrian Wojnarowski nationally and Jonathan Fagan locally that Miami is a serious destination. Other credible voices, Shams Charania today in the report on James Ennis says the Rockets remain in strong position to secure Carmelo Anthony. Mark Stein of the New York Times says that Houston is a strong frontrunner even over Miami. So it's a little bit mixed, but it sounds definitely better than 50-50 that the Rockets can get it done in terms of bringing in Carmelo Anthony. But Karthik, there's a point that Dave Hardesty, Clutch fans on Twitter, raised yesterday that I thought was really good, in that this pursuit by Miami, it's almost like a litmus test to see where Carmelo's head is at. Because the fears in terms of his system fit, is he willing to accept the role? Is he going to be selfless? What's his desire to be in Houston relative to a coastal city, those types of things, New York. You can go on and on about the rumors that followed Melo throughout his career. So if he passes up Miami, where he would clearly be a higher option on the totem pole, more nightlife, more exposure, stuff like that, to be, you know, at best a third wheel, maybe even less than that on the totem pole here in Houston, to me it's a good indication that his head is in the right place. Is that sort of how you're looking at it? I mean, it would be a downer if Melo were to pick Miami because he's a very talented player who's available for cheap, and you want to take advantage of that if you're a team like the Rockets trying to compete with the Warriors. I get it. But in terms of the questions over where his head is at, is he going to be willing to accept the role? To me, if he picks Houston over Miami, it would seem to be a pretty good indication that he's buying in and doing what he needs to do, is it not?
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I think I've also read a little bit that, you know, the la-la factor of her liking Miami, et cetera, might sway him there. If he comes here, you're right. It would be because he's all about winning. He sees this is the best place for him to win, alongside, yes, a good buddy in Chris Paul and someone that he knows pretty well in James Harden. And playing for a coach that he has previously clashed with. Sacrifice, a focus on winning, a focus on purely just basketball would all be part of the messages that he would be sending if he came here. And so, you know, that's why I've been excited about it, because I think it would send a clear signal that he wants to come and he wants to help us win. So there's a whole host of factors, but I mean, yeah, I mean, if he comes here, it'll be a surprise to a lot of people in terms of how well he can do.
What's your view on his optimal usage? Are you looking at him as a starter, or do you prefer him off the bench and let James Ennis take that 3-and-D role in the starting lineup? Just curious how you see the optimal usage now that James Ennis is in the fold, and talking in this hypothetical about if they're able to bring in Carmelo Anthony as well, which according to Shams Charania and Mark Stein nationally seems to be the plan for both Carmelo and the Rockets.
I think I'm like a majority of folks in that I see his best fit coming off the bench, okay, just because he'll be going against lesser defenders. He'll be likely playing with one of Chris Paul and James Harden, which I think will give him just more room and freedom to operate. And I think otherwise, putting him in the starting lineup would have him chasing players I think he wouldn't want to chase on the defensive end. And so, fit-wise, I think it's better on the bench. But that being said, I mean, there's a case to be made that we can balance out the scoring and just kind of have a more potent offensive punch with our starting lineup, have a quick hook on either Chris or Melo in that scenario, and then stagger minutes that way. So I think they'll figure it out. And the other thing I was thinking about on Twitter earlier today is just that he probably pairs best with Capella and CP3 on the defensive end. So there's a little bit of that going on, which is like, how do you minimize any defensive weakness that he might have. So I don't know. I think, to me, my gut says bench, but I could see the case for him being put in the starting lineup and maybe getting pulled regularly after, you know, 5 or 6 minutes to then play the rest of the minutes with the second unit.
Yeah, ultimately that might be the best way, because I think you're looking at two different skill sets at play. I had thought about bringing him off the bench because it's great if you can put him in that second unit with Chris Paul because you can run your offense through him. But the flip side, you know, you mentioned his defensive limitations. Yeah, you can mitigate those better in the starting lineup. We actually heard from Mike D'Antoni at the midpoint of last year that Ryan Anderson's numbers, what they looked at internally, were a ton better with Clint Capella. And that's why they held off inserting P.J. Tucker into the starting lineup for so long, was because they knew that was the best way to keep Ryan playable, giving him minutes alongside Capella. Ultimately, Tucker was so good that by the All-Star break, they had to make that change, and eventually it led to Ryan being completely unplayable. So it's probably a balance of the two. You want to get the best out of Carmelo offensively, which means probably running your offense through him in the post, at the elbows sometimes, but also you do want to mitigate his defensive deficiencies, which might be overstated a little bit. The numbers show that against, in terms of switches, he's actually, you wouldn't call him good, but I also wouldn't call him bad. He's more mediocre. But either way, he's not a plus guy, so potentially keeping him with Clint Capella is a way to mitigate him not being a plus defender. So maybe the answer is playing him in short burst. I'm sure the Rockets will figure it out. One of the benefits is that if the Rockets get this done in July, they have an entire offseason and training camp to figure out what his optimal usage is and to get him to buy in, as opposed to what happened in Oklahoma City last year when it was sort of a shotgun marriage, getting it done right before training camp, and Billy Donovan, a relatively young coach in the NBA, seeming to let it get out of control. Karthik, I want to bounce a couple of things off you, things that have bothered me on Twitter, and I suspect some of them may have bugged you as well in terms of the national reactions to this Carmelo to the Rockets story. I'm bothered. There are two pet peeves of mine that I see. First, the fact that he'd be taking at least some of the minutes from Trevor Ariza or Luke Bamute last year, and this reaction of, well, you're replacing a 3 and D guy with Carmelo Anthony, who's a bad defensive player. How's that going to work? And my response to that is, I didn't realize it was a prerequisite that you had to win by the exact same formula the Rockets did this past year. There are many different ways you can win basketball games. You can score 130 points the way some of Mike D'Antoni's older teams came close to at times. You can win games the way Jeff Van Gundy did, scoring 75 or 80 points a game and many permutations in between. Certainly not suggesting the Rockets are going to be radically different, but the idea that they have to be a carbon copy of exactly who they replace, no, you can give up some defensively and gain offensively, and ultimately, as long as you get more on the offensive end than you lose defensively, you can be fine. It's about scoring more than you give up, and there are lots of different ways that you can go about doing that. You don't have to have an exact carbon copy. The other thing that bothers me are these comparisons to the Warriors. This talk about what happens in the Warriors matchup. And there's a couple of asterisks I want to throw out there before I even get into it, which is that A, Carmelo Anthony did play in two Thunder wins over the Warriors last year. So all this talk about him hypothetically being unplayable in a Golden State matchup, well, the Thunder won a couple of times with him out there. Secondly, in terms of those looking at the defense and saying, well, you've got to have a defensive player against Golden State. Well, we saw Luke Bamute, who's a defensive ace, become unplayable in that Warriors matchup. So it's not as easy as saying, well, you've got to be defense. No, there's a lot of things that go into who plays against the Warriors, and you could easily argue at times in that Rockets-Warriors series this past spring, most notably late in Game 4 or Game 5, when you could use a guy in Carmelo that can make shots, create his own offense in half-court sets when things get really sticky. But what really bothers me about the Warriors' comparisons and making it out to be, well, how does Carmelo fit in a hypothetical Rockets-Warriors matchup? It's not like what made the Rockets special this past year was just about the Warriors. It's not like they had some secret sauce in the Golden State series that we didn't see all season long. Even if we adjust for the Warriors' injuries, I know the Rockets won 65 games, so Golden State's 58. I understand the gap wasn't really that big. That was kind of artificially large due to Golden State's wave of injuries. But even when both teams were healthy in the regular season, even the first two rounds of the playoffs when both went 8-2, it was fairly close. You had two really, really good teams. So the idea that the Rockets just magically became something different in that Warriors series in the playoffs, that's a little bit overdone. What the Rockets did against the Warriors in the playoffs was largely what they did, what we saw them do all season long. they were the same team that we watched since October. So if Melo fits with the Rockets in the regular season and they succeed in that system, I don't expect things to be radically different against the Warriors in the playoffs. That's not guaranteeing that they win, of course, but this whole idea that regular season success is irrelevant, not really. In terms of the Rockets versus the Warriors, what we saw in the regular season correlated pretty strongly with what we saw in the postseason. So I don't really get this mindset that's out there of, well, Carmelo might be a good regular season piece, but he hasn't helped you against the Warriors. To me, the same things that would make Carmelo Anthony a valuable regular season piece would make him valuable potentially against the Golden State Warriors. So I'm just curious, your thoughts on the Twitter reaction, largely negative, because I know it's popular to bag on Carmelo Anthony, but to me it's a little overdone, is it not?
Yeah, I would agree. And the thing is, you know, people, well, a couple of thoughts, so I won't just rant. I think the first is, Melo would be coming here to our discussion earlier at a discount for him actually choosing to be here because he wants to buy in. So there's a difference between what he's going to do last year and what he's going to do this year, potentially, already. Second, I actually, you know, I might go a step further. I think that he actually presents us advantages against the Warriors more so than he does against any other team.
Mm.
And the reason I think that is, yes, you know, Ariza and Luke were capable offensive players, but they were very predictable, right? They were standing corners, they would shoot threes, maybe they would attack the closeout once in a while, but that's it. And I think what happened over the course of the Warriors series is that they zeroed in on that. They'd rather roll their dice with us, like shooters like Ariza, taking a bunch of threes, and it paid off for them, and focusing their energy on our core offensive players. And Melo, I think, is as good a shooter, if not, I mean, better, in my opinion, than Ariza on the offensive end. But more importantly, he's more diverse. He can put the ball on the ground. He can post up. He can make plays for others if he wants. And I think there's just more upside offensively. And if they can figure out a way to maintain that defensive intensity, you've improved the ability of our team to beat the Warriors, I think. And so, is that going to happen on day one? No. But does it have a chance to happen by the end of the season after a year of hard work and gelling and really focusing on both ends of the floor? Yeah. And so, to me, he improves the upside of our team, especially if he buys in and he fits like we want him to. But I understand that that's not a guarantee. And I think that, and the other thing is, it's not a move in a vacuum, right? You can surround him with other defensive players, make other moves, like we have already with James Ennis, and to make sure that the team as a whole is better off with him on it. So, yeah, I mean, I just think the overreactions are funny. And as we've never won an off season in July, and so it'll be interesting to see how we build. And Daryl Morey, that was the first thing out of his mouth this week, was just, be patient. Like, we have a plan. We generally kind of know what we want to do and how we want to peak in April and May. So I'm actually excited if it works out. I think there's a real high upside for Melo coming here, but I know I'm in the minority on that.
Great stuff as always from Karthik Prasad, Stanford KP on Twitter. And now, effectively, we go back to refreshing our Twitter feeds, waiting for the Melo bomb that inevitably seems ready to drop at any moment. Karthik, thanks so much for the time. We'll be talking again soon. Okay, buddy?
All right, thank you, Ben. Have a good time with the Astros game.
That's Karthik Prasad. Good stuff as always. Appreciate him stopping by. And yeah, now we go back to watching the Rockets Summer League game, which is on. The Rockets are up 12 as I record this podcast Wednesday evening. Can't remember what day it is because, God, everything blurs together in NBA free agency. Anyway, until next time, when hopefully we have news on Melo, but either way, we'll have some Summer League analysis to give out. Started talking about that Monday, and it looks like we'll have more games ahead, assuming the Rockets are able to secure this game and win in the tournament format. They're the 5 seed after going 3-0 in their first 3 games, and looks like they're, as I record this, they have a good shot to go 4-0, so we'll have more to talk about in the next couple of days on that front. Until then, though, if you want more content in the interim, the best place to get it, as always, is on Twitter. I'm on there at Ben Dubose. Show is on there at Lockdown Rockets. Also got an email address, lockdownrockets@gmail.com. Facebook account at facebook.com/lockdownrockets. Website at lockdownrockets.com. Always, you can access our content, ask me questions about the team, suggestions for the show. Anything we can do to make this a better podcast for you, the diehard Rockets fan, would absolutely love to hear from you. Also, if you have not subscribed to us already, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Megaphone, That way, whenever there's breaking news, such as today's James Ennis signing, you will get an alert right when the new episode is out. And if you would be kind enough to leave us a 5-star review as well, that's how we look attractive to potential advertisers and keep the business model running here at Locked On Rockets, the most regular podcast covering Houston Rockets basketball. Odds are, because we're part of the Locked On Podcast Network, shows across the NBA, NFL, and even some MLB, that includes Locked On Texans here in Houston. You can find us on your platform of choice in terms of listening to podcasts, music, whatever it may be. So just search for Locked On Rockets or Locked On whatever team that you're trying to get info on, and you'll get some great local analysis, just like hopefully you've become accustomed to finding here at Locked On Rockets over the last 2 years or so of this show. So for now, I will sign off. Again, the headline of today's news, the Rockets have signed Detroit forward James Ennis to a 2-year deal, second year being a player option. It's a minimum deal, low risk, high reward, quality 3-and-D option, and we are still awaiting word on Carmelo Anthony and whether the Rockets will be able to close that deal, essentially bringing in James Ennis, and we presume Carmelo, to replace the slots that went in the rotation to Trevor Ariza and Luke Mbah'Mute a year ago. So now we go back to Carmelo Watch. For now, have a good evening, and we'll keep you posted right here at Locked On Rockets, the home for podcast analysis of Houston Rockets basketball.